views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the hit show Love Living Radio. Ignite your whole being with Emily Perkins on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Do you love your life? Are you truly free in being your authentic self? In a stress-filled world full of distractions, Love Living Radio is a space to explore how mindful presence can steer you toward an ignited life. What does a life you really love look like? Emily shares her innermost vulnerabilities and breaks down barriers through conversations about sex and relationships, the magic of plant medicine, and so much more in order to share the power of living your life with love and loving the life you live. Now, here's your host. Good evening, everyone, depending on where you're coming from. I am Emily Perkins, and you are listening to Love Living Radio. And tonight, I have the distinct honor of being joined by a longtime friend and fellow coach and also fellow lover of life, Jonathan Kay. And I'm so excited because we were just chatting a little bit before we started to get on about technical difficulties, because John is actually going to, or as I call him, JK, is going to be coming from the Dominican Republic, where there is limited internet and Wi-Fi. So we may have some technical difficulties. So if we do, just bear with us. But it kind of perfectly aligns with our topic tonight, which is living simply. And JK has kind of been such a great leading example for that over the past couple of years as I've watched the transformation that he's made in his own life. He was a community activist, an affordable housing developer for 38 years in the Boston metro area. And then for 35 years, he was and has been a competitive polo player, which I've actually gone to a couple of the matches, and they're so thrilling. It's like the coolest thing to watch. And you can also tell how much skill it takes to be able to do that. And then he's also been a pilot for 15 years, flying paragliders, which I had no idea. I didn't even know that about you, JK. And then the last 12 years, he's been a longboard surfer and working as a coach on his amazing farm that he created from, which actually I would love to know the whole story and vision and creation of this incredible farm that he's now living on and coming to us live from in the Dominican Republic. So hi, JK.
Hey, Emily, thanks for having me. It's really, really fun to share tonight. Awesome.
It's so fun. It's so fun. One, that you're actually coming from the DR, you know, like there's something kind of magical in the fact that, like, the thing that we're talking about is living simply, and you're coming from the farm that you created in the Dominican Republic. Yeah. So what had you, I've been dying to know this forever, and we've kind of talked about it in the past, but what had you start a farm in the Dominican Republic?
A friend invited me down to visit 15 years ago, and I was introduced to surfing and the simplicity of the surfboard, and the community here was wonderful. And it took me a number of years just watching the community, getting to know the country and the way people live here. And then along the way, I just found that the surfing really took over, and the simplicity of it and the joy from the surfing just made me want to focus more on that and the simplicity of the surfboard. So it was really the simplicity of that. My friend Ted, you know, Ted Torrey, I think, from the Glen, we had built the house in Rhode Island, and he it was such an exhausting process, this house build. And when I woke up from the funk of building the house, realizing we lived near the ocean, he gave me, actually sold me a surfboard. He said he didn't give it to me because if I paid for it, I would consider it more value and to really pay attention to it. And I did. And so that surfing led me to the Dominican Republic, and the surfing and community here led me to watch how simply, I mean, the average person here in most third world countries are making $100 to $300 a month. And I just, from my travels around the world earlier in my life, it really started to sink in how wonderfully happy these people were, many of them. And don't get me wrong, there are lots of problems too with poverty, but there are a lot of people here living on a very limited income that are smiling every day, very generous of spirit. And I thought, my goodness, working in the corporate world, borrowing money from banks for years and years and the stress of that. I think I added it up recently with my wife, Lynn, and I think it was probably 6 or 7 years that I didn't sleep from stress. And thought, these folks here are so happy. You know, what's the secret? What, you know, why are they doing it? And we're working so hard to be part of that stressful system. So years into the surfing, we used to celebrate every year. We'd have a picnic at the end of the surf season. So I would put together the picnic or the barbecue to say thank you for the waves. And I did it for a number of years. And the third or fourth year we did it, we said, well, let's just go up into the mountains and forage for the food. And maybe find something to roast. And it was during that search, the fourth year, that my friends took me up into the mountains. And I saw this incredible mountain range, this area called Madre Vieja. And it was so beautiful. And they showed me this little house, and it had fruit trees and vegetables in the garden. And of course, a 12-month growing season. And so I spent the next couple of years looking for a piece of land. And the piece of land that we ended up on happened year. So the timing was really interesting. So there was a lot of trepidation, but the pursuit of the farm and this road, this 1 hour drive up into the mountains, and the road was so terrible. And this car I had, every time I drove up the road, the parts would fall off the car. And I was feeling like it was just, and my friends and family were telling me, what are you doing? What are you doing buying a piece of land in the middle of nowhere on this road that's the road from hell? And for some reason, it so grabbed my attention in reading some permaculture books about ways to farm that are not high in intensity of the farm 4 years ago. And it's been a wonderful adventure, a really wonderful adventure.
I love hearing that. I also didn't ever know that the thing that kind of led you to the DR for the first time was surfing, and that surfing kind of like opened up a new way of life for you. And I also didn't know the story about like where your farm came from and the challenges that, honestly, I knew that there were challenges along the way, but like, despite the challenges, like something within you knew that this is where you were going, that you were meant to have this piece of land and create this farm. It sounds like from over here, there's a ton of courage in that. And also a lot of trust in yourself and in whatever that pull was, that intuitive ping that had you know that this is where you were going.
Well, it was really funny because I'd never been able to germinate a seed. I don't know anything about farming. So to come from the concrete and asphalt of the inner city for 40 years and think that I was actually going to be able to grow something, you know, I had absolutely no confidence that that would happen. Chickens. And I guess what I'm trying to say is the expectations were so low that I thought, really, what's the worst that can happen with this thing? We have a piece of land and not be able to do anything with it, and then maybe abandon it would be the worst, or try to resell it. Although the title process of actually buying land takes years and years, we're still in the middle of it. So there was some risk involved.
Mm.
Chicken. I was just amazed. And then when I saw some seeds that we planted actually germinated, and some of the first we did was arugula, and the arugula germinated and it grew. And this greenhouse I put together, we were lucky enough to put it in the right place. That's in this valley. So there's a nice breeze that goes through the greenhouse, and it's actually good for what we're planting. There's been a lot of luck involved too, because you can plant obviously and have things fail. But the worst thing happens is you buy some seeds, they don't come up, and you go hungry. Luckily, there's a little bit of an income coming in from a couple things in Boston, so that I can survive. But it's, the expectations were zero. So this year, 4 years later, it seems that every time we go up, that there's a little something to harvest. And it's all miraculous. If I were trying to run the farm as a business, I think it would be very hard. But what we're trying to do is grow as much as we can, share with the community. And that's a big part of the process, is community sharing, because what I learned from the community when we were building projects, you don't move into a community and tell them what you're going to do. You go into the community and ask them what they'd like to see and identify people and what their strengths are and try to work with them. And certainly having no background in planting or farming, I had to rely on the people that I'm working with and to be accepted up in the mountains. And I'm conversational in Spanish. I'm not fluent. So that's obviously another challenge. But the team we put together after these number of years, it's really brings us so much joy, because we're all appreciating this journey that we've all been on together, and celebrate anything that ends up on the table is a complete celebration. And when your expectations are zero, one orange, one egg, one guanabana, one coconut, it is a miracle.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of interesting that you say that, because when I was thinking about living simply and what we were going to talk about tonight, I was thinking about what does it mean for me to live simply? And the thing that actually came up was not about, and this is just one thought and one perspective on it, but it wasn't actually about stuff and material. It was actually about a way of life through how we view things. And that what you just said about having one seed, that first arugula, one plant, and the joy and the gratitude and the sense of accomplishment that comes from that one simple thing is actually what I was thinking about so much when thinking about this episode. That for me, living simply is very much a mentality. Whether it's create, and as we know, our lenses, our perspectives create our reality. How we view the world creates our physical reality. So for me, what kept coming back for me all day today was how having a lens of the simple joys, of the simple gratitudes, of the simple one seed, that simple one plant, to me has so much power and is such a gift to the concept of living simply, because you get to, I'm so not explaining this very well, but it's more along the lines for me, I guess, of a perspective and a way of thinking and viewing your own reality versus I'm going to only have, I'm totally getting tripped up in my own thoughts right now.
Let me say this. What I've found in this process is how little you really need to survive. So for instance, there's a spring on the farm. There's this wonderful clear water that comes out from a hole. And there'll be times where I'll actually leave, take the old car up the mountain road, and I'll leave the town thirsty. So that when by the time I get to the farm, 45 minutes later, I'm seriously thirsty. And it's a 5-minute walk from where I park into the spring to get a drink of water. And we all know how important water is. But to have that to have that drink, when you have something to look forward to, there's a need, and it's a simple need, and it's satisfied. It's amazing how much pleasure there is from those small things. So to leave thirsty, have a drink of water, and I end up, I'm using a very small filter up there. We take the river water. It's a 5-gallon bucket. I can make a couple of gallons of water with this little filter. The filter, I think, is $25, and it'll make 5,000 gallons of water. So whenever I'm up there, it's such an amazing feeling to know this little filter, and we're lucky enough to have water. Because remember, I think there are a billion people on the planet that have to walk between 4 and 8 hours a day just to get their water needs met. So the amazing gratitude from having water nearby and having it available, and that you just need it, and you need it to grow the crops, you need it for the animals, but you want it to be in balance. So the idea was with simplicity, have enough land so that there's no pressure on it, and then the simplicity of your plant can provide, as long as you don't put too much pressure on what you're asking. And of course, when you realize, you know, one plantano, one piece of yucca, which is a root like taro, it looks like the end of a baseball bat, the same diameter, and you'd grate that and with a little oil, and these carbohydrates are so amazing. You have two of these pancakes and you're full for 3 or 4 hours, and it's probably, you know, 5 or 10 cents to buy. So there have been days up there where I drink the water, cook myself a little lunch, maybe a couple of eggs from the farm, and I realize I've been up there all day, and I haven't spent any money. And as opposed to going to New York City, when I walk out the door, I've spent $20 before I get to the first corner. So there's this whole thing about simply, there's living simply in terms of what you need, and there's also living simply in terms of what this money thing that we're all involved in, you know, and I participate in for a long time. And the stress, the cortisol that gets, that I'm sure our bodies produce when we're under stress to try to make ends meet, or are under pressure. And there's still pressures with farming. There's life and death matters, of course. But that pressure of the money thing every day and trying to make sure those bills are paid because you're the possessions or whatever you put together puts additional pressure on us as humans. And so I'm trying my best to reduce that stress, to produce less cortisol, because it's such a dangerous chemical that our body produces. So it's really, you know, a journey to stay as calm as possible for as long as possible with the least amount possible, and see if you can produce some joy as well. Now the surfboard, when you drop into your brother Kevin knows this, and your mom, and you do too, when you drop into a wave at sunrise on that little piece of plastic, you know, the power of that ocean connects you. So between the energy from this surfing in the morning, which gives you the energy and the joy, and then to go and watch something that's growing, produce a little bit of food. I never thought I would be able to experience that much joy with so little, without spending a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you just kind of honed my thought a little bit, because it's such an amazing thing hearing your story and knowing that you're in the DR living this life and like having the opportunity to kind of live and work on a farm and feel the gratitude of finding your water. And like, unfortunately, most of us, or not all of us, are going to be able to live that life, or will choose it, you know? So like living life simply is like both, I guess, both a physical and a mental way of being. And what I got from what you just said is that it's like, or what the point that I was trying to kind of like verbalize before is that like, you can find a way to live simply by how you view things, by the simplicity of getting on your surfboard in the morning and experiencing the vinyl underneath your hands and the feel of the wave as you pop up, you know, like the sunset that's coming up as you're paddling out. Those simple things, it's really more than anything, rather than even just your physical life and what it looks like, it's how you hold it. You know, like how you choose to like see and appreciate and take that breath to just like be with what's present in front of you in that moment. Whether it's, you know, going to grab water from your handmade filter or waking up in the morning and looking at your dog.
It's true. It's true. And the process has been joyous. And I, you know, when I'm doing the coaching, I'm always very aware of this, is that this way of life isn't for everybody. And that's why my website is youragendanotmine.com. It's whatever's going to bring you peace, whatever's going to allow you to be completely present, because that's, you know, one of the joys of being in the farm is I have more time to read. I've always been a terrible reader my whole life, and I've been able to spend more time. There's no internet, there's fewer distractions, and to do more reading, and over again, to the luxury of being present, of not letting the mind wander. And I was never very good at meditation. The surfing is my meditation, and certainly being at the farm in the quiet, working in the garden is my meditation, or whatever project we're working on. But what can we do as individuals to make sure we're present? Because that's really all we have. We know that. We read about it. We're told it. But to practice it has been terrifically difficult for me my whole life. And I'll be 62 in June. Just in the last couple of years am I learning to be more, to really be present. And that's helping me with the coaching. It really, you become a better listener. And that's always been a problem for me, being a really good listener and working on that and understanding that there's so much work to do all the time to really be in the moment. And I'm certainly not present all the time, but I'm working on it all the time. And this is one of the goals of this project for me is to, and I'm having people visit the farm or having this experience. I'm quieter. It's quiet. And it's a great place to talk and connect and find out where people are at. And it's a great place to listen. And so that's been one of the great joys is all the people are having this wonderful kind of transformative experiences at the farm, which is a joy for me to have created a place where they want to come and visit, but also to try to get people, as I'm trying to all the time, to be more present, to listen, to be gracious, to be less judgmental. As one of the most judgmental. I grew up in a family where mom's a pretty judgmental person. Sorry, mom, if you're listening, but pretty judgmental person. And these are things I learned very young. And I have to work all the time on not making a judgment. We went canyoning a couple months ago. I was sick. I had the flu. A gentleman invited me canyoning. And I had a bad shoulder I've been working on. And this canyoning trip scared the crap out of me. Every step, we were in these dry riverbeds and it was mossy and slippery and one, you know, silly step and you're going to do an ankle or break a leg. And then it's a 1 hour walk out of the canyon, terrifically strenuous. And I said to my helmet, who's my guide afterwards, I said, man, that was some physical. He said, you know, but you never know who can do this trip. He said, I walked into the lobby last year, he said, and some people signed up for this trip. And I walked in and there were four people. They were all over 200 pounds, one over 300. And he was looking for his clients. He said, no, are you the canyoning guy? Yeah, we're with you. And he didn't make a judgment. And these three or four people went all terrifically overweight and they completed. They did what I did was, and they didn't complain. They got it done. You can't judge. And there's so many instances where we think we know what we're talking. We think we're so smart that we can decide from looking, and it's just the biggest mistake we can make. And I'm trying to work on that. Mm.
Yeah, I hear that. And I think that there's actually something, there's a bunch of things that popped up as you were chatting, but the first thing was about being present, and like I think the connection that you made between being present and judgment is really interesting, because I did a day of silence on one of the workshop retreat weekends that I did in the Blue Ridge Mountains with Core, and it was the first time I'd ever done a day of silence, and even just an afternoon of silence, where you don't listen to music, you don't talk at all, not even to yourself, like nothing. You don't have TV, you don't have the internet, you are just completely present. And it was probably one of the most profound and one of the most magical days of my life, because everything stood out. Like, I am petrified of spiders, which is funny because you were, before we jumped on here, you were talking about like how you could run a power wheel with tarantulas, which normally would make me want to barf. But I was sitting on this dock on this incredible property in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and this huge, huge spider, like huge spider. Like I get up after doing this little sit by the pond and watching the birds, and I turn around and it's like right there, right in front of me. Like it was waiting for me. And I just stopped. I didn't scream, which is what I would normally have done. And I just kind of stood with it. And that was one of the many moments where I was just like bumped up against myself or fear, or even just watching the magic of nature. Like a huge rainstorm came through and I ended up running through the mud, through these trails by myself, laughing and crying at the same time. I hugged a tree and felt the pulse of Mother Earth. Like, it was legitimately the most magic day of my entire life. It felt like I was like a 5-year-old again. And it was simply because I was absolutely 110% present. And I did have judgments pop up too. Even of myself, there were other people walking around the property. Like, what are they doing? Are they being silent? Are they cheating at this? Like, you know, like I feel like they kind of go hand in hand sometimes. When we quiet our mind starts screaming. But it also like hones that that view, that lens again of like, okay, well, what are we looking at? How are we judging? How are we thinking? How are we experiencing the present moment right now? Oh my God.
I just grabbed this book because I'm in the middle of one second. And we talk about fear. Fear is such a big one. I'm reading, this is the Fear Project. This is a gentleman who's a surfer. He wrote another book prior to this. But what our most primal emotion taught me about survival, success, surfing, love, the Fear Project. I talk to this, we speak about this in coaching a lot. And fear stops us in our tracks so often, and such a difficult, difficult to move forward when we're fearful. And I realized with all of the pursuits that I chose, well, the polo for sure, the flying, and even the surfing, it was always what a joy it was to confront a fear, to paddle out into a hurricane wave. Actually, I remember being out with your mom. It was a hurricane at Tuckerman's. The waves had to be 12 feet. I think it's a day I know she'll remember. And it was just absolutely scaring the crap out of me. And your mom dropped into a wave and did a great job. I was out there with our friend Christian. And I was looking at these huge waves and he's taking them. You know, he's taught his brother to surf 30-foot waves. Christian's an amazing surfer. And I'm watching. You know, I got outside. I paddled out into the lineup, but I was not engaging with these waves. And I didn't want to. And Christian looked up at me and with his finger, he said, come on over here, JK. You can't catch a wave from over there. And I had to paddle over and catch one of those monsters in the cold water. But I mean, so gratifying when we take a look at something, you know, we feel the fear and we do it anyway. And, the outcome, you're going to learn something. And what's wrong with failure? It's one of the things I work on with my coaching, is that having lost everything 3 times, having spent 30 days in the mental institution and a total nervous breakdown at 23, from having gone bankrupt in 91, of fighting drug dealers in New Bedford where they threw a bomb in our office and burnt down our buildings, lost everything in 91, and then in 2007, lost everything again, was way upside down. With the banks I was working with, and just terrible fear and anxiety. And I think that's probably a lot of what's driven, you know, the desire to be live more simply now, because those swings, those huge roller coaster swings, it's a lot of work to work your way out of them, you know, and having done it 3 times, I'd really love to not have to do it a fourth, but of course there are going to be other challenges. Could be health, could be anything, could be climate change that we're all going to be working against. Who knows? But, you know, as the Chinese say, you know, fall down 7 times, get up 8, but sure would prefer to have a little bit of calm for a while.
I get that. And I actually didn't know half those stories, which is kind of fascinating. Like, you have been bumped up against fear in so many different ways. And it sounds like there is something within you that has sought it out just for, like, even just that feeling of facing it, which I get because I have done the same. I was actually just talking about it with a friend and having gone through a review of 2018. And I talked about this on the last show, actually, ironically, that 2018 for me was so much about the year of fear and bravery, of like constantly choosing courage. And I hear that. I mean, I hear that in pretty much in every story you've ever told, you know, like starting a farm to the bomb thrown in your office, you know, like there's something that you get from that challenge, that fear, that moment where you have to like step up or crumble. And who are you on the other side of it? You know, like, who are you after you move through the fear, after the fear hits you and slams you? Who are you? You're usually a different version of yourself, or at least.
Yeah, there's a, Yes. I'm reading a book now. I actually met a gentleman down here a few weeks ago. His name is Mo Godot. He's was Google engineer, and he's written a book. And his whole premise is moving beyond fear and to connect people with joy. And Mo's story is really interesting. He worked with Google for a number of years and was not very happy. Money, fame, these things were not giving him joy. And he, his son, Allie, who's very close to, called him one day and said, Dad, I want to come and talk to you. And Mo had been working on his happiness and his path to joy. And the book he's written is called Solve for Happy. And he found his way to joy. And then his son had called him and said, let's get together. And he flew to Dubai and met with him and said, Dad, I really love you. And I need you to start working more with your heart than your head. And he delivered that message. Then the next day, his 21-year-old son, who he called his guru, who was his best friend, had an attack of appendicitis, and Mo drove him to the hospital. And 3 hours later, he was dead. His 21-year-old son, his best friend. And so this man, for 17 days after his son's death, started to write this book called Solve for Happy. And his vision, and he came to the farm and we spoke, is to sell 300,000 copies, and he believes he's changed the lives of 10 million people so far. They've written him to tell him about this book. He's interested in simplifying his life, continuing to find his joy, and also to carry on his son's legacy. His son was just an amazing young man. The book is worth a read. Again, it's called Solve for Happy. And his plan over the next 10 years is to reach 1 billion people, to improve their lives, to get them to think about living more simply within their means and to find the joy, to be present. And he's got a very compelling story. It's one of the hardest things, obviously, you can do, I understand, is to lose a child. And Mo is potentially going to be centered down here on the North Coast, and going to be filming, actually doing some training videos that my wife Lynn and I are going to be involved in, and some other friends. And so there's this really interesting movement afoot, it feels like. And I didn't realize it when I started the farm, but one of the things that could come from this is that we're all trying to change our consciousness. We're all aware of climate change and the problems that we're going to be facing. How exciting would it be if, and we know what's happening now, there's more of what people trying to be connected, more connected to the environment, to their lives, to their health, to the mind-body connection. And this man is trying to reach 1 billion people with his message and really resonates because of what he's gone through. So it's just been a really, really interesting process.
What about the book and his story and the message of what his book has really resonated with you?
Well, there's so much in it. I would say when it comes to knowledge, it's really fun. This is a very smart man. And really, we think all of us, or many of us, think we have so many answers. We're so smart. And even science has the answers. But you remember, they'll do some, recognize some technologies, something to do with splitting an atom or some physics lesson that we all thought was the gospel. And 4 or 5 years later, it completely changed on its head. So where are we in a world where we think we have so many answers and really we know nothing? We don't have the answers. And again, all we can do is be present and learn, not be judgmental, take the information, filter it, but not think to whatever the change might be, not to be stuck in whatever we believe we were told it should be. So many other aspects to it. It's definitely worth a read. And I'll keep you posted and the community posted on where he goes with this project of his to try to affect joy. Because at the end of the day, one of the things that we all know is really, why are we here? We're here. And he'd say, our default state is joy. We come out of Wayne Dyer, who's one of my favorites. You know, we come out from 0 to 5. We're perfect. You know, it's the world that starts to kind of bump up against us and change our view. You know, someone steals or takes our toy in the toy box. And, you know, but before that, as we come out into the world, we're just completely present, completely joyous until the world kind of shakes us around a little bit. So we have to remember that we are, our default state is joy. So the more we can remove the issues around that cause suffering, you know, making judgments, being angry, being ungrateful, not being truthful, whatever they might be, you know, the more we can connect with that default state of joy, the better off we're gonna be. And so I'm not great at recalling, you know, all the chapters, but it resonates with me. It was really interesting that this gentleman and his partner Terry, who are undergoing this project, that they ended up at the farm with me, you know, talking about this. So here's this. I mean, what are the chances that would happen? So there's lots of magic out there. And boy, when you get tuned in and you look around, it's as simple as when things are going well, you feel like you're in flow. Maybe you've heard what it's like to be in flow when you're working on something. Wow, I really need the shovel. I thought I left it over there, and you turn around and there, you know, the shovel's right there. We need it, or the piece of wire that you need, the tools you're literally thinking about somebody that might be able to help you, and they literally appear, you know, 15 minutes later. Or you're thinking, geez, I really would love to give those vegetables to David, you know, and I literally, you know, you're thinking about him coming down from the farm in the car, and I'm thinking about David, and I round the corner and there's David, and the car door opens and the vegetables go out. And so, and there's such a joy in that. You think, wow, it's, you know, I'm so enjoying it. And look what happens when you're really loving what you do. And that doesn't mean that bad things don't happen. I mean, you know, had 2 dogs shot because they were on other people's land doing what they weren't supposed to do. 2 dogs that I loved, and I love my animals. So this stuff can happen. The third world can be a very dangerous place. You know, even driving here is super dangerous. And we see death, we see accidents. I don't even want to get into it. It's part of the third world experience. But if you're really loving what you're doing, and you're going to pay attention and focus, and again, not let the fear creep in. A lot of the things that have happened are just, you know, truly, truly magical. And
uh-oh, I lost you. And what was the very last thing that you said? Third world countries. Woohoo!
They're dangerous. You have to be on your, even, you know, I tell them, even crossing the street or stopping on a highway, you see, you know, an animal that needs help, you know, you got to pull way off the road. The third world is dangerous. It's a dangerous place. The world is dangerous anyway. You have to use your radar to kind of find your way. But with the magic, with the flow, you also have to be cognizant of the danger without letting the fear obstruct your forward motion. How's that sound?
Yeah, I so resonate with that. That the magic is everywhere, and it's so it you just kind of nailed it for honestly for what's been present for me for the past like 2 weeks. The difference between how life can go from fear and how life can go from flow. You know, like I will just totally call myself out and just say, like, the past 3 weeks I've been super in fear. I have a ton of really big responsibilities and big things that are shifting and moving in my practice, with kind of stepping away from more of my one-on-one clients and more into group work, and leaving my house and my business and going and leaving the country for 4 months in April, and starting group coaching programs and trainings and leading a retreat in Costa Rica for the first time ever, and taking 10 women out of the country and leading them. Like, there's so many big things that are shifting, and I was sitting square in a shit ton of fear. I'm not gonna lie. I was for like 3 weeks. I was like, oh my God, what if this doesn't come together? What if I can't do this? What if I don't have enough energy? What if I'm not enough? What if? Tons of fear. And from that space, nothing was connecting, you know, like it was so hard. You know, that's at least what I found, is that, like, when you're sitting in fear, everything feels hard. Everything feels scary. Everything feels heavy. But when you're in flow, so like I was in that space, I luckily have an amazing community of female coaches that kind of supported me through it. And we're like, okay, I need to just sit and be present with myself and allow the fear to just be there. You know, instead of fighting it so hard and trying to fix it, which is what I did for like 3 weeks, I just sat down one morning and I welcomed it. I welcomed the fear. I welcomed what it had to say. And it was funny because I thought that in doing that, in welcoming the fear in, that it would, like, I would just melt into a puddle of tears. I didn't. You know, I was just like, Oh, hey, fear. Like, I've seen you before. I know that story you've got for me. I'm just going to let
That's interesting. Let's talk about the eraser test for a second. Go ahead.
The what?
Well, the eraser test. The eraser test. It's one of the things, and it was, I was trying to bring the point about earlier and I'd forgotten what it was. Tribes is the eraser test, in that all the fear we've experienced, all of the trials and tribulations of our lives, they've been such amazing educators, such amazing, paid attention to them, you know, they create who we are. And certainly having experienced lots of failure in lots of areas, you know, you look back and say, well, if I gave you this eraser, you take that eraser, you can erase anything from your past you'd like to erase. And some of us, there are certain things we would like to erase. And if you think about most of them, I don't want to erase too much, because there, those failures, that fear, failures in particular, create who we are. And without those experiences, we don't move forward. And I have said this about this farm project. I believe it. In this case, I've needed every skill that I ever learned in my life. When I started this 4 years ago, I needed everything I'd ever experienced to undertake this project. And I'm so appreciative that I've been through what I have been through to give me the tools to make a fairly confident attempt, or an attempt that I felt there was some chance of success to move forward on this project. I needed every bit of failure, every bit of struggle, all of it. And then which makes any success, again, any even little bit of success, incredibly gratifying.
Yeah. Yep. And I think that, you know, kind of what we were talking about earlier about like all of the moments of fear that you've been, that you've faced and come up against in your life, and that amazing, I'll just actually say that this is how I experience fear. Like on the other side of it, like after these 3 weeks happened and I was, you know, just kind of like suffocating in it, to be honest. Like it feels like a trap. It feels like you're just trapped in this stuck, heavy energy that you can feel and you know is there, but you're just like, I don't know how to get out of this, you know? And I think that like the thing that kind of is so simple, you know, if we're talking about living simply, is just like, for me, it was being present, you know, sitting and being present with the fear and what it was trying to give me, you know, like that, what's on the other side of it. Mm-hmm. And then from there, things started to flow. And this week has been like, bing, 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 the big things that were stressing me out so badly just started to kind of show up, kind of like you were talking about with the magic, like David just showed up, you know, like the new esthetician that I might be hiring showed up, the people that might watch my dog who I love more than anything that was stressing me out hugely, thinking about how I was going to, you know, make sure that he was safe and happy while I'm gone, like that showed up, you know, like the difference between fear and flow is kind of like the difference between living in chaos and living simply.
Mm. I definitely agree.
Mm. Yeah. And I think, honestly, I'm so grateful that we did this show, because I didn't actually conceptualize that until I really started thinking about this show, that like living simply for me so much is about how I view my life, the lenses that I'm looking through. You know, am I just being grateful for the fact that I have a home and a dog and a business and taking that breath in the morning and looking at the waves, you know, when they're surf, like allowing the living simply to be the way that I actually view and take in life instead of what's around me. It gives you, or at least I'll say for me, it gives me so much like comfort and power in knowing that like I can create a simple life anywhere I am simply by the way that I choose to view it.
And I'd like, I know we don't have much time here, but the last point I would make is, and I work at this all the time, is you really have to enjoy your own company and to learn to be quiet with yourself, happy with yourself. I'm spending a lot of time alone at that farm, and I've never been able to enjoy time by myself as much as I do now. I needed activity. I needed company and whatever it was. And I'm sure some of it comes with age. But that is, to me, it's the greatest gift I've given myself lately, is to be able to spend time quietly alone and not be fidgety, not feel like I have to leave the situation I've spent hours and hours staring at geckos, spiders. The other day, Lynn and I were hanging out, just looking at the moon. The clouds were going by the moon. And I frankly smoked a little bit and the clarity of what was showing up in those clouds in front of the moon, and still, I mean, there was everything, reptiles and bunny rabbits and raccoons with capes, you know, flying, you know, I mean, it must've been a dozen things. And they were so clear, a cat, you know, a donkey, it was so clear. And it was really relaxing and not needing to go anywhere else. And that's been the greatest gift of this farm, is not wanting to be anywhere else at this, mm-hmm. at this point, to learn, if we can all learn to enjoy our own company and to be gracious and less judgmental and to help in any way we can. That's not that complicated.
Mm. Yeah. I also hear like really, truly appreciating and being present with exactly where you are, wherever you are, whatever is happening in your life, you know, like to just not want to actually be anywhere else but where you are. And the thing that comes up when I think about that too is that so much of the time when it comes to fear and pain and stress and like the stuff in our lives, you know, like if we're the opposite of living simply, like when we think about especially the fear and the pain, all we ever want to do is get out of it, fix it, get away from it, not feel that thing, not feel that fear or that pain. And even in the vision of you sitting on your farm and not wanting to be anywhere else, like the thing that pops up is, what if we can be that in the face of fear, in fear, to just mm-hmm. sit there with it and be with it and not want to be anywhere else, not try and fix it and not try and move through it. So like, even if your life right now, whoever's listening and watching, even if your life right now is full of stuff, busy, physical, agendas, like your time, whatever, if your life is super, super full and crazy and it feels like it's anything but simple, you know, like sit with that. Maybe just be with exactly where you are right now and let that be okay. And then see where you want to go.
And no matter whether you think it's terrible or great, you really don't know. You won't know until down the line whether whatever's happening to you is good or bad or otherwise. This is, how much more time do we have? I don't know.
I think we have about a couple minutes.
Well, this one might be a good one to end with. It's the, you know, you never know what's good luck and what's bad luck. The boy and his father are on a farm, and the horse runs away. And the neighbors come and say, "What terrible luck! The horse you have ran away." And well, the horse came back, and it brought 10 other horses with it. And the father said, "Well, maybe so, maybe yes, maybe no." And the next day, the boy was trying to break one of the horses and broke his leg. And the neighbors came over and said, "What terrible luck! Your son broke his leg." And the father said, "Well, maybe it's good luck, maybe it isn't." And the next day, and the army came to take all the able-bodied boys from the town, and the boy was not able to go to fight in the war because his leg was broken. And the neighbors came and said, "Oh, what good luck you've had." And the father said, "Well, maybe yes, maybe no."
Yeah, one of my favorite things that one of the first coaches I ever worked with told me, she said, "There are no coincidences." And to be honest, I don't even know if I believe in luck anymore. I think that there's intention in everything. There truly is. And it's so much about how we hold it. Do you create it as bad luck or a bad decision? Or do you see the gift that it gave you?
There you go. Mm-hmm. Amen.
Amen. Oh, I love it.
It's fun tonight, Emily. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for like finding a way to make this happen from the Dominican Republic, from your beautiful farm, for sharing your stories with us.
The internet. Well, let me be clear here. I don't have internet. There's no internet at the farm. I'm down in the town, so there's no internet.
So awesome. Well, thanks for making the trip down to town.
That's okay. My pleasure.
Oh, it's been so much fun. I love talking to you, and it's such an honor. And I just, if people want to get in touch with you and do some coaching and come to the farm, how do they do that? How do they get in touch?
Your agenda, not mine.com.
Perfect. Awesome. So if you're looking to go out and maybe do some coaching and have a transformational experience on this incredible farm that JK built, go to youragenda.com. Your agenda, not mine, all one word, .com. There we go. Your agenda, not mine, .com. And if you're interested in what's going on over here at Love Living Holistics, we have a ton of retreats, workshops, all sorts of really fun stuff. So thank you for joining us, all of you out there who tuned in and who are listening. I wish you all so much love in your life. I am Emily Perkins, and thanks for listening to Love Living Radio. Have a good night.
Thank you for listening to Love Living Radio. Ignite your whole being with Emily Perkins. Tune in every second and fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com as Emily shares the power of living your life with love and loving the life you live. For more information or to listen to past shows, visit LoveLivingHolistics.com. That's LoveLivingHolistics.com. See you next time.